Hello.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Hello, how are you?
I'm doing well. It's good to hear from you.
Oh, you're welcome.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear who that was.
It's Batya. You were talking, so I didn't want to interrupt.
But that's fine. It's nice to hear from you as well.
Thank you.
Please join us in saying the Anubhava talk. The letters of the month of Adar, the poof that created the constellation Pisces, Dagim, the fishes in Hebrew, and the Gimel that created the planet Tzedek, the planet of justice, of righteousness. The Jupiter's name in Hebrew is Tzedek, which also means righteousness and justice. And the Aleph that the modern Kabbalists are telling us to utilize. And together the three letters to utilize during the Adar Bet. And the three letters together spell the word EKG, modern technology that helps us understand what's going on in our heart. Kabel Rinat, I'm sorry. Not for Dorshe Yehuda Yehuda Charma Nun Kimodav Yud Kaf Shin. The sequence Yud Kaf Shin we utilize to take any body part that needs healing back to its stem cell state, where it will be healed, where it will be cleansed, where it will be rejuvenated. And then we return it back to the body in its newly pristine state, where it will again do its job as it was created to do. Barhem taharem betet reish sadi taf gimel. Asin Kadosh. The sequence, the verse from Samuel Beth. This team of home, and I will make a place for my people Israel, and will plant them that they may dwell in a place of their own and be moved no more. I'm now going to read a verse from the Zohar. I'm reading from the Parashat Tzav, section 15, verse 106. Vayehi Noam Adonai Eloheinu aleinu maaseh yadeinu funenei aleinu maaseh yadeinu funeneihu. Behalet lecha tev uvish kedusha sa'avuta. Dilet leya ikara v'shar shal'ela uvobada diltata itar obada dilela. Ma dechayile v'obada v'obada itar le'ela le'itaved Ovada uma tetale bemili bemili kadit gezar bemila it arhaki le'ela. There is no good and evil or holiness and defilement without its essence and root above. Through the deed below, a deed above is aroused. Depending on the deed, a deed is aroused above, and the deed is done. And whatever depends upon words occurs through words. For when a word is pronounced below, it is so aroused above. My commentary. A word is a deed relative to the level of consciousness of the person. This Zohar is teaching us that nothing happens without a spiritual cause. This is the meaning of co-creation. Since Mayim Nukvim, or feminine waters, is a cause, yet the spiritual action above is considered the cause because it actually fulfills the desire of the person. In essence, an action below causes the fulfillment of the desire above. That needed to be revealed, that wanted to be revealed, although the Creator has no wants, has no desires, has no lack. But the Creator wants, not really wants, but makes a suggestion, this light needs to be revealed, and that activates a person down below. And when it activates that person down below, that person says words or does an action. That reveals the light and activates something in the spiritual world that starts the flow of goodness, starts the flow of Shefa. And this is how we understand the cause and effect relationships. In essence, an action below causes the fulfillment of the desire above that needed to be revealed. Thus, both levels are called co-creators. Does anybody have any questions? I do want to make one statement about I was looking for something. The people that I'm staying with would prefer if my later classes, like this one at 8:30, be moved to 7 o'clock. So starting next week, this class on Tuesday night and the class on Thursday night will be moved to 7 o'clock. The class on Saturday night, because it's a weekend, they're all right with the 8:30, and the later on in the evening it is, the better for the study of the Kabbalah. So I wanted to make sure you all had that early in the class. Now, if you'll give me 1 second, I will find the page that I lost. Not really lost, but
So tonight's class is on advanced reincarnation. And it's class number 42. And I'm looking for the particular class, that particular page, which I had open. So again, I apologize. Here it is. So if you go to the Revealed Wisdom page and go to row 11, second column from the left, you'll find a link to the Advanced Reincarnation series of classes. And when you do that, you'll be able to scroll down to class number 42 and also class number 43. We're probably going to use both links, both handouts tonight. When you open up class number 42, the handout should bring you to chapter 14. And there is only one section in chapter 14, so it doesn't have its own number. I'm starting to read. When we speak of the name of chapter 14 is Soul Splits. When we speak of a certain person reincarnating into other people, we must not make the mistake of thinking that this refers to the original soul. Rather, a person's soul can divide into an unlimited amount of roots and sparks. The spiritual realm is by nature boundless. From each root comes out a different potential. One should therefore never limit one's abilities. Even though in this incarnation you come from a specific root which can manifest certain abilities and others not, that root is connected to a grand soul central that branches into other roots that possess other abilities. When a person lives a spiritual life, he is close to the grand root and is therefore able to access the abilities of the other roots that share his mutual grand source. Never underestimate yourself and what you might be capable of doing. Rather, strive to always be more spiritual so that your potentials will open and flow. This is Rabbi Auerbach's way of describing this idea, being able to change everything as you wish. So we speak about, and this is a commentary, but I think it's important for you to understand it. We will speak about a person who is born with a specific set of DNAs. And in that DNA, there's a problem. Let's say they're born without a particular limb, God forbid. Or they're born with a disease potential, or a disease actually manifested, God forbid. All of that is changeable. The concept from the East called karma, as it's understood in the West, is that you're born with a destiny and you have to live out that destiny and there's no possibility of changing it. That is absolutely false. That's what Rabbi Auerbach is telling us here. Everything is potentially able to be fixed, corrected, which is what tikkun means, correction. And this is what we have to understand. The more spiritual you are, the more your ability to fix both yourself, other people, and the world. I'm continuing to read. And within a single root, there is an unlimited amount of sparks. How does anyone ever become fully rectified is the question that's being asked. If there's all these sparks and all these roots, and from one lifetime to the next, you can make the same mistake or a different mistake, and how do you ever get it all corrected? Firstly, for this reason, many people share the same one of these soul roots. But still, if 1,000 people share one source, one root, how can they or even 1,000,000 people possibly deal with an unlimited, infinite amount of sparks? The answer is that the soul comes from endless, boundless, immeasurable places. Even after it enters the finite plane, it does not lose connection with those places. In fact, its entirety does not descend, and part of it actually still remains there. This is expressed by the aforementioned piece of Zohar about every righteous person having two souls, one above and one below. What comes out of this is that a person comes from a root of countless sparks because his actions have infinite proportions and can really deal with and fix an unlimited amount of sparks. The sparks that are not yet rectified return, while those that are rectified ascend to their fitting level. And each Gilgul, each reincarnation, rectifies some of those sparks. Thus, it is the sparks that are not yet rectified that return, while those that are rectified ascend to their fitting level, where they will remain. It has to be like this. Otherwise, people would never become rectified, because they would constantly destroy what they fixed up, and no one would ever get anywhere. This does not rest upon you to finish the work, yet you are not free to be exempt from it. This is a teaching of the Perkei Avot, the most Kabbalistic revealed portion of the Talmud. Based on the above, it means that you don't have to finish fixing all of your soul's sparks in one lifetime. Simply do diligently what's in front of you at the moment, and step by step, everything will be rectified. This, in fact, is the matter of Nadav and Avihu, who reincarnated many times, as was explained on the Pasuk. Let there be double of your spirit for me. For in the beginning, Nadav and Avihu were in Elijah, and after that in Elisha, coming from the other Gilgulim. In other words, the double spirit was Nadav and Avihu, which Elisha wanted to inherit from Elijah. This is not just a random example, as will be seen from later in this work. The entire world depends upon the rectification of these special souls. The example of Nadav and Avihu is used here to hint to us that knowing about them aids in comprehending how to bring Mashiach. Elisha was a combination of two levels. After all, Nadav and Avihu came from the same root, and many sparks were affected by them. Thus, as a result of each reincarnation, many sparks and portions of their roots were rectified. However, the sparks that were not rectified were the ones that Elisha asked of Elijah. Those that were already rectified ascended to their fitting place. Therefore, Elisha was a combination of two levels. the main spark of his soul came from Joseph, as is known, and he also possessed part of the root of Nadab and Abihu from the level of Cain. And this applies to every person. We can have a soul, a part of our soul, that is one person, one root, and another part of our soul from another root. And we can have as many as 613 soul roots at any one time, at any one day. Although this is very, very rare. Yeah, go ahead and ask the question.
What's the typical number of soul roots?
What's
the halfway between them?
What's the typical number of soul roots?
Yeah, in the first. You gave the upper and the lower limit.
Someone who is not active spiritually, as an example, our consciousness of a peasant living in China, or a soul that was living in the Middle Ages, where there wasn't a lot of change, that soul root probably had 600 different parts. Because there wasn't a lot of change, and the mixture of these things, one change would apply to all of those parts.
And then they would cause the tikkun and the soul rapidly.
Right. But then there was, in our generation, and in spiritual people in our generation, they have probably much fewer, because the changes are much quicker. And when they go up at the end of a day and they go to sleep, and that they're in the higher academy, as we've come to start calling it, that higher academy is saying, okay, but based on these actions, this soul root can go to its place and it will be replaced with this soul root, and so forth. I'm continuing to read. As Rabbi Nachman taught, God never does the same thing twice. Even when he sends a soul again to the world, it comes back with different parts. Here a new combination is made. Joseph is merged with Nadav and with his brother Avihu. This type of fusion is usually made between souls that are close in roots. Most of the souls branch out of either Cain or Abel. The Cain root comes from the world of Tohu, from chaos. The Abel root comes from the world of Tikkun, of rectification. Nadav and Abihu come from Netzach and Hod. And these Sephirot are as a pair. What we haven't really addressed is why Nadav and Abihu come from Netzach and Hod, and how does that relate to the world of Tohu, or the world of Tikkun? That's really not explained right here, but it'll be explained later in the book that we are translating, The Gates of Reincarnation. Nadav and Abihu come from Netzach and Hod, as we said. These Sephirot are as a pair, that are one that is two, and they are the root of the firstborn's double portion. Thus, Netzach and Hod are called two parts of one body by the Zohar, and they always identify as two halves of a unit that cannot function without each other. The blades of a scissors cannot cut with one blade. The lips. We need two lips. Wings. These are two parts of the same thing. These are Netzach and Hod. And it is interesting for us to note, I'm reading, making commentary that's not in the writing, but it's interesting for us to note that the teachings are that prophecy has its root in Netzach and Hod. Therefore, Joseph, who always associates with doubledness, and who reclaimed his double right of being the firstborn, became hooked to Nadav and Abihu, who are rooted in the source of the firstborn's double share. This relationship connection is hinted to in the Torah when it describes their lineage. And these are the names of the children of Aaron. The firstborn is Nadav. Elsewhere, when the Torah relates a family tree, it does not go on out of its way to say that so-and-so is the firstborn, because it is automatically understood by the order of the names mentioned who has this privilege. Here this is emphasized to hint to the fact that this is a classic archetype case per se, par excellence, of firstbornhood. The Zohar reveals that Pinchas merited great longevity. He lived for generations and eventually became the illustrious prophet Elijah. When his time came to leave the world, he was told by God to anoint Elisha in his place. As part of the deal of taking the position, Elisha asked for an inheritance. Let their, he used the Hebrew word please, let their pleas be a double portion of your spirit coming to me. The Ari explains that he was asking for Elijah's bi-soul portion of Nadav and Abihu. This is hinted to in the polite wording of the request. Please, spelled Nun Aleph, Nun for Nadav, and Aleph for Abihu. It is the first letters of their names. Revival comes through Elijah of good memory. This is a result of his special powers to unify and harmonize above and below. Therefore is the gematria of his name 52, which equals twice the tetragrammaton representing the union that is brought about through him between the divinity that is found above and the divinity found below. For this reason, Elijah himself, whose soul was in perfect union with his body, did not have to die. The main messianic light is in the Cain root, played out through Mashiach, the son of Joseph, and Mashiach, the son of David. The main messianic light is in the Cain root, as we said. In the grand redemption process, it plays out through Mashiach, the son of Joseph, and Mashiach, the son of David, who come primarily from this root, this double root of Nadav and Abihu, of firstbornhood, of Cain and Abel. Therefore, did this process have to express itself through their children? The souls of Nadav and Abihu from Netzach and Hod share the same source as the two messianic roots. Moreover, they actually energize them and channel to them their light. Also, part of the secret of Netzach and Hod's unity is that each is included within the other. Therefore, even though intrinsically Mashiach, the son of David, is rooted in Nadav, Netzach, and Mashiach, the son of Joseph, comes from Abihu, Hod, nonetheless, they each contain each other. Or better said, they each contain parts of each other. Elisha the prophet was a major milestone stage in this unfolding soul procession from its Mashiach, the son of Joseph, aspect. This is the real intrinsic reason why Joseph teamed with him to help it along all the more. From the mutual inclusion aspect, he possessed Nadav and Abihu. Thus there are two that are four, This is a phrase, a teaching from the Talmud, which itself comes from the two names, sub-names, Yud-Heh and Vav-Heh, of four letters within the Tetragrammaton. Yud-Heh, Vav-Heh itself. This teaches that the two messiahs, each inclusive of two souls, will reveal all aspects of divinity on all levels. Are you getting a sense and the awe of how the system of reincarnation actually works? Not just in Nadav and Abihu and Elijah and Elisha, but in you yourself and who you are components of and who you were in a previous incarnation. Another reason why these souls were wielded together, the special upper premium, deluxe part of Cain, comes from the Zahara Elah, the supernal effulgence of Adam. It is the brilliant higher section of his soul, which he inherited to his sons, Nadav and Abihu, and also to Joseph, grew from this level. Together they granted to the world a special connection to this higher light and expanded consciousness that it brings, which leads to redemption and the revival that follows. The prophet Samuel was also a major step of this process. He received the souls of Nadav and Abihu before Elisha. The rabbis teach that Samuel was in some sense equal to Moses and Aaron together. The Ari explains that Moses and Aaron are from Netzach and Hod, harboring the souls of Nadav and Abihu, who are also from the level, accordingly makes him like them. Remember the teaching that Moses started at Netzach and grew to Daat, elevated himself to Daat, while Aaron started at Hod and moved to the right side of the tree and became Chesed. These teachings are being explained here in a different way than most people have ever heard. Empowered by the souls of Nadav and Abihu, Samuel anointed King David, thus opening a channel for the Mashiach, the son of David, aspect to flow to the world. Empowered by these souls, Samuel anointed King David, thus opening a channel for the Mashiach, the son of David, to flow to the world. I didn't duplicate this. This is the way it was duplicated. In the Sefer, many times there are headlines that are duplicated. I'm not sure if this is coming from the translator, who feels it's important, and I would be less concerned about it at that point, or is it coming from the Ari and his teachings that we need to have this extra duplication to break the klipa? So I include them when they occur. His name Elisha, indicating this, for with respect to Cain, it says, to Cain and his offering, God did not pay favorable attention. In Hebrew, it's lo sha'ah. Because of his sin, however, Elisha rectified the sin of Cain, and thus is called Elisha, since God heeded and accepted him. The letters of lo sha'ah, lamed aleph, shin ayin hey, can be turned into Elisha'ah, aleph lamed yud, shin ayin hey, meaning to me, God paid favorable attention. The root word for attentive favor is sha'ah, Its gematria is 370. Shin is 300. Ayin is 70. It refers to the 370 lights of the face that shine from Aris, the highest part Suf, through which God as if smiles upon his creatures. One way of describing the goal and point of the entire Torah is to seek and strive for a divine smile. Cain, who must attain special closeness to God, is especially in need of favor and smile. To him it is not a luxury, but an absolute necessity. Because of the husk must precede the fruit principle, he must to some degree go through the opposite. He cares so much about having God's goodwill and favor that he is hypersensitive to anything that might look as if he is being pushed away and not accepted. Thus, he requires constant validation and is easily discouraged. Rejection is his greatest crisis, accepted in his greatest joy. This whole paragraph from the Ari, you really need to understand the idea of Cain and Abel and their relationship, because he's describing personality and character traits. Where do they come from? They come from the actions of someone in a previous lifetime. They come from the astrological influences. When you understand these connections, then this paragraph will be making more sense to you. The premise is, the higher the potential spiritual individual, the lower they fell into the klipot from the sin of Adam, or in any sin. The higher your potential in a given lifetime, probably your earlier lifetimes, the further down the path you were, the lower you were spiritually. Because you have the higher potential, the klipa goes after you and draws you down and attracts you to the physicality and brings you as deep into the klipa as it possibly can. But you have the potential to grow to the higher level. And this is also one of the teachings about tzaddikim, that a Baal Tshuva, somebody who has fallen deeper into the klipa, can rise higher than a tzaddik who's never sinned, than another person who doesn't have that potential. I'm continuing to read. King David's entire essence is always look for God and seek his favor. It comes from his messianic root in Cain. He had the lower part of the Mashiach soul, which will return with the upper part and lead the whole world to thirst for God and perpetually seek his goodwill. Elisha paved the way for the individual to turn deep-rooted feelings of rejection and discouragement into a thirst to enthusiastically quest for the divine favor by successfully balancing and integrating the awesome energies of Joseph and Nadav and Abihu. Thus, since he originated from the spark of the Cain root, he also wanted the sparks of Nadav and Abihu to join him. As it says, let there be double your spirit for me. He merited them because of the spark of Cain that he already possessed. In spiritual space, closeness is determined by similarity. The likeness of these bits of Cain brought them close, until they fused into one incarnation. Nonetheless, each of the souls retains its qualities. Sometimes they can be contradictory. This is significant for us to know. A person should not be fazed if he sees diverse tendencies and traits in his personality. When God puts things together, he knows every single detail of what it will mean. Thus, he has some special reasons why he sometimes merges souls that have different perspectives into one human being. Somehow, the dynamic of the inner conflict helps the self grow into something much greater than otherwise. Nadav and Avihu were extremely ascetic creatures who never cared to get married. Most or have much to do with worldliness in any shape or form. Joseph was a ladies' man. The Midrash tells that he was so handsome that the women who were in his presence lost hold of what they were doing, to the point of cutting their hands instead of the bread they were cutting. The Zohar explains that Joseph is rooted in Yesod, the Sefer that connects male and female in procreation. This manifested below in him, having tremendous beauty and charisma, causing him to be very attractive and desirable. It is not problematic that they both came from Cain. It is an expansive soul's source that includes many things. From this, you can make the necessary connections and understand all reincarnations throughout history. Hence, it is never the rectified sparks that reincarnate, but rather those sparks that have yet to be rectified. And so we are never spiritually unemployed. This is wonderful. Man was born to work. A teaching from the Talmud. Does anybody have any questions? If we open the handout from class 43, we get to chapter 15, and section 1 is the first part. And it's telling us that impurity leads to sin is the title of this section. I'm going to start this section. I'm not sure that we will complete section 1, or if we do, I may start next week and redo it, because it's an important section as well. Now we will explain the reason why sometimes great and righteous people are the sons of completely evil people. Like Abraham, who was the son of Terah, a priest of idol worship, who made idols for the world and caused people to stumble. We will then be able to understand why the Klipot caused man to sin, to the extent that the temple was destroyed. The blessed Shekhinah was exiled among the nations, and God was angered. As a result of the sin of Adam, all the souls fell into the depths. The secret is that as a result of the sin of Adam, all the souls fell into the depths of the Klipot. The Zohar explains that today also, sins cause souls to be given over to and taken captive by the Klipot. From this we see the great responsibility we have for our actions. If one has already caused damage, it's never too late to repair. The Hebrew word for repentance, teshuvah, literally means to return. It refers to the restoration of the souls to the side of holiness. The Klipot themselves are the remainder of the dirt of the Zuhama and the Pasolet, the extraneous material. Zuhama usually refers to the profound and indelible spiritual impurity imparted to mankind by the original snake. Pasolet is usually a type of unusable waste, which in this case is also the aspect of spiritual impurity within creation. Both of these terms are used in reference to the negative forces. They came into being through the shattering of the vessels from the broken pieces. Therefore, all of the things that come out of them have an aspect of being extraneous and tend to be unclean. Separated out from that which was holy at the time of the kings of Edom, when they died, as has been explained by the Ari. This refers to the breaking of the vessels, the shattering of the pre-creation Sephirot, which result in the world of Tohu, the world of chaos, the state of existence just prior to the first day of creation, before the initial rectification of creation. The Sephirot had yet to be named Chesed and Gevurah, etc. Instead, they were referred to by the names of the kings of Edom, as listed at the end of Parashat Vayishlach. My commentary. There are eight kings of Edom listed in the Torah, as specified above. The eighth one lived. The first seven died. What this is referring is 10 Sephirot, all in a line. There was no communication between the Sephirot. This means that the first one gave to the second everything that it had. The second survived and gave to the third everything that it had. The third survived but was damaged. The third gave to the fourth, who shattered, as it could not handle the light that was the same light as what was in the first one, which had been channeled to it. All the rest, from 5 down to 10, shattered. In the Torah, only one's wife that is mentioned is the last king mentioned. This would place the idea of Malchut and allow us to understand this order. I hope my commentary is clear. There are two ways and two diagrams that have been come down to us as the Tree of Life glyph. They each have 10 circles. One is the Tree of Life that we know, with a right column, a left column, and a central column. And one is a straight line that starts with a circle at the top and goes to another circle and another circle and so forth. 10 circles in a row. And they're linked by a line. This is the way God created the 10 Sephirot initially. But what happened, and it is part of the plan of creation, what happened, is the first circle, the first Sephirah, without a name, except it was named the name of a king in Edom, that first Sephirah gave everything, all of its light, completely. It let everything flow through it like a channel to the second Sephirah. And then the second one let that happen to the third one. But the third one became damaged. It didn't die. It didn't shatter, but it was damaged. Bina was damaged. It wasn't called Bina, but it was damaged. And this is the beginning of the potential of negativity that happens in Bina in our world. Then Bina gave everything that it had to Chesed, to the fourth one, and that one shattered. It couldn't handle the energy. And then it moved down, shattering vessel by shattering vessel, from Sephirah to Sephirah, breaking them. And what was left, and we have a mental picture of these sparks, these shards of a vessel like a broken teacup. And where did these shards, these sparks go? They went into the mud. And in the mud, they were attacked in a sense, and the klipot, the shells wrapped themselves around the sparks. They couldn't absorb the sparks. The energy was too much. It would have killed them. But they could wrap themselves around it and veil it from outside and live off the radiance of that spark. This was the world of Tohu and chaos. Tohu and Bohu, there's two different worlds. And I'm talking about the world of Bohu, chaos. The world of Tohu was before even that world. And it just consisted of 10 dots all in a line that didn't ever share with each other at all. And then they learned to share, and they became Tohu. And Tohu shattered the vessels. This is the teaching of the Ari from the Etz Chaim, the Tree of Life book that Rabbi Chaim Vital wrote. And one day, it has now been translated into English, and one day I will teach that, although the better source, in my opinion, is Rabbi Ashlag's Esther Sefirot, 10 Luminous Emanations. But that is where we have reached, and I will probably start over this discussion again so it will be more helpful. Maybe my ability to express it will be clearer next week. Are there any questions? Classes this coming week, so as we go through it, I will explain. Tomorrow night at 6:30 is a basic class in Oregon where I'm staying. It starts at 6:30 Pacific time. It's going to be a class on the 72 names. I hope you'll join me. It's always worthwhile to expand your knowledge of the 72 names. Thursday night this week will be at 8:30 because we haven't announced the change of time. This week, Thursday night, is a Zohar class. The next week, this Thursday night, is the 13th of March. Next Thursday night is the 20th of March. That class will start at 7 o'clock. It will be a Zohar both Thursdays. Saturday night this week actually starts at 7:30, and that is the reading of the Purim Megillah, Megillah Esther, the revelation of the concealed. That energy, that holiday, starts right at the end of Shabbat, Motzi Shabbat. We'll read from the Megillah Saturday night. Sunday morning, we will again read from the Megillah, because the mitzvah is to hear the Megillah twice. So that will be the third class in our preparation of the holidays from the Sion Adar through Shavuot. But it will be primarily focused on the Megillah Esther. Monday evening at 5:30, we will have our next class, continuing our teaching of the Noterican and the different methods of Noterican for the Hebrew letters. Tuesday night, this class next week will start at 7 o'clock. And we will start with this handout from class number 43. Are there any questions? Have a beautiful week.
Thank you. Hello. You too. Well,
thank you. You take
thank
care.
You. Good night.
Hi.